this is where people are going to sit back at the kitchen table tonight and make a decision as to whether they can continue a life in rural Alaska.
McGrath residents face a steep increase in the price of gasoline. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 26th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Coast Guard says goodbye to the tallest structure in Alaska.
It's kind of sad to see this piece of history go away, but we hope to continue to serve the American public to the best of our abilities.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Find qualified Alaskans to fill your company's job vacancies at Alexis, the state of Alaska's virtual career center. Alexis has hundreds of workers for you to browse through, and you can specify details about required levels of experience and other qualifications. Learn more at alexsys.alaska.gov or visit any Alaska job center. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
McGrath residents got a shock at the fuel pump this morning. The price for gas increased more than $3 a gallon overnight, from $6 a gallon to $9.20. Dustin Parker is the town's mayor. He says the community is outraged.
I think a mini revolution was started today in McGrath, and I think that the community is going to get together, and they're going to do what they can do to find an alternative to Crowley's outrageous fuel prices. And I don't think they'll do it quietly.
The only fuel supplier in town, Crowley Maritime Corporation, has apparently had to fly gas in after their tanks ran low. But Parker doesn't buy that argument. He says town residents have flown gas in for much cheaper prices, and nothing warrants the kind of increase Crowley is imposing.
When you have a company that has a monopoly in Western Alaska and most of your rural areas that can, you know, essentially do whatever they want. I mean, that's really when you look to the state, to your legislator, and the legislature and the governor and say, you know, we're not asking for a handout here. We're just asking for regulation, and we're asking for the process to be fair.
Parker has sent letters to McGrath's state lawmaker and Alaska's congressional delegation. He says residents should be able to absorb the gas price increase for a short time, but he says the fallout will be a much more dramatic if the increase also extends to heating fuel.
It's already so expensive to live here anyway, with the cost of groceries and electricity. We've got the highest electrical rates in the state. This is just kind of the icing on the cake. This is where people are going to sit back at the kitchen table tonight and, you know, look at their finances and make a decision as to whether they can continue a life in rural Alaska.
It's not unusual for communities along the Kuskokwim to see gas prices jump in late spring as barged supplies run low. But Parker says in McGrath, the price usually only goes up by a dollar or so. He says the first barge normally arrives in McGrath in mid-May. That should bring prices down, but Parker says a record low snowpack this winter has had a big impact on river levels, and he wonders if a barge will be able to make it.
People aren't anticipating the barge this year. We normally get four. Last year, I believe we got two or three. And this year, we're hoping to at least get one. But with the river levels the way that they are right now, I mean, I can't see a barge coming up in May.
And Parker says even if a barge does make it, prices don't usually fall back to previous levels. Crowley was willing to confirm the price increase, but couldn't provide someone to talk about it in time for air. Federal duck stamps have been required for waterfowl hunting for decades, but it was never enforced until this year. Now, native leaders are saying they still aren't necessary. For member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Myron Nanning, president of the regional nonprofit association AVCP, maintains spring subsistence hunters are exempt.
We feel that the requirement to have a duck stamp makes a sports hunter out of us, which we're not. And we never were.
Nanning was in Anchorage in Washington, D.C. last week, meeting with other tribal leaders and lawmakers about the issue. He also participated in a recent statewide teleconference with other Native organizations. They feel that they should not have to have the duck stamps, but the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it's law.
We were told by Fish and Wildlife Service that duck stamp enforcement is going to be happening this year, but they told us that it's not going to be a priority.
The federal duck stamp was created by hunters in the early 1900s when they noticed disappearing waterfowl habitat and wanted a way to help. Congress agreed to the stamps in 1934. Sean Sanchez is the deputy refuge manager in Bethel. He says the stamp is like a tax hunters put on themselves to help secure wetlands from development.
It's been extremely successful. Millions and upon millions of dollars have gone into the program. There's been millions of acres of land not only acquired. If it's acquired, it generally goes into the refuge system, so it's protected forever, or it goes into easements.
Nanning says natives have been hunting spring birds for thousands of years and should not have to get the stamps.
The Alaska Migratory Bird Co-Management Council, which is made up of native organizations from statewide, like from Barrow all the way down to Southeast, have never agreed to the duck stamp requirement.
Sanchez says people with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska understand what the tribes are after.
We understand that it hasn't been a traditionary or customary use to have the requirement of duck stamps on subsistence hunters. So we said we will work with the tribal organizations and basically phase in the enforcement of the duck stamps.
A 3-year phase-in process started in 2008 with the purpose of allowing time for public outreach and for tribes to get a legislative change. Enforcement started with a verbal warning, then a written warning, and in the third year, this year, citations could be written. Now that it is the third year, Sanchez says that writing tickets for duck stamps is still not their priority. More important is conserving emperor geese, spectacled and stellar eiders, and enforcing the ban on lead shot.
So our focus is definitely on those priorities and not going out and seeing just how many people we can encounter to check and see if they have a duck stamp.
He says they are leaving it up to officers' discretion as to when and if citations are issued in the field. For Nanning, the argument over duck stamps is more about hunting rights than money. But the money isn't a non-issue. Federal duck stamps are $15. Hunters are also required to have a state duck stamp and a hunting license. All that can add up to $45. He says for a family of hunters, it can be a hardship. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Anchorage police say a woman and small child were found dead this morning inside a South Anchorage apartment, along with a severely injured man. Lieutenant Dave Parker said officers are treating the scene as a homicide. He said initial reports were that the woman and child were shot, but that had not been confirmed. Parker said the apartment had been rented to a member of the military who had not shown up for work for some time. Military police went to the apartment this morning and found the dead woman and child. Anchorage police found the severely injured man in another room. He was taken to the hospital. The nature of his injuries are not known. None of the three have been positively identified. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new sculpture goes up in Anchorage. The artist is willing to take criticism along with praise.
People don't have a bit of a laugh about it. That would be a, that'd be a sad business.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Alaskans hoping for a gas line from the North Slope to the Rail Belt and South Central now have a deadline for when they can expect delivery. Governor Sean Parnell today signed a bill into law setting up a new streamlined approach to get gas into utilities, businesses, and people's homes by the end of 2015. Parnell said the goals for the project are aggressive but achievable.
It's Alaskans taking charge of our future. We're saying that we're going to work to bring our resources to Alaskans and to markets beyond. The last year, our administration has spent getting cost estimates on a gas line. This puts in place a formal structure for how that can move forward from here on.
Originally sponsored by House Speaker Mike Chenault, the bill was combined with another bill by Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire to get final House and Senate approval. Chenault said that without deadlines, the project would not have as good a chance.
While we all understand that a bigger line will probably be cheaper, the issue is do we ever get to that big line? And I don't think Alaska right now can wait on 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road before we actually build this big line. I think that the energy needs of Alaskans need to be met, and they need to be met as quickly as we can at a reasonable cost.
The bill charges a new management team with using research and proposals that have already been completed and with making a decision on routes and service for the line. The five-person team will be headed by the executive director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Dan Fauske. The Fairbanks North Star Borough and the City of Valdez have accepted the North Star Borough's withdrawal from the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority. The Fairbanks Assembly passed an ordinance at its meeting last Thursday, formally acknowledging the North Slope's decision to drop out of the public group formed by voters to pursue a gas pipeline. Fairbanks Borough Mayor and Port Authority Board Member Luke Hopkins told the Assembly the North Slope is giving the Port Authority a $50,000 parting gift.
The North Slope Borough Mayor, in discussions with me, has said they're basically sending a check to the Port Authority. It's kind of a departure thank you.
Hopkins said the money will be used to cover Port Authority costs, but not the group's $10,000 debt load, which is already covered by development partners.
There are, I guess, understandings and agreements as to who is going to be covering that debt, and they are our partners that we have for the All-Alaska gas line that would run from North Slope to Valdez. So it's assigned to the partners that we have in that venture.
The North Slope Borough decided to drop out of the Port Authority this spring after the group announced a plan to truck natural gas to Fairbanks. The project does not help the North Slope and actually competes with existing North Slope energy businesses that sell in the Fairbanks market. The tallest structure in Alaska will be demolished sometime this week, although Coast Guard officials won't say exactly when. The Loran Tower at Port Clarence stands at 1,350 feet and is the tallest tower of its kind in the country. It's more than double the height of the Seattle Space Needle. From KNOM and Nome, Lorelei Kanin has more.
Coast Guard Petty Officer Sarah Francis says the Coast Guard, along with the Army Corps of Engineers, will take the Loran Tower down with explosives later this week. The Coast Guard established a 2-mile safety zone on Sunday to ensure boaters or travelers will not be harmed during the controlled explosion.
And due to its condition and without funding for repairs, it's an ever-increasing risk, so it's going to be removed. In addition to that, once the Loran station is completely uninhabited, it won't have power anymore. Therefore, we can't power a light at the top, so it's our duty to remove it to make sure it's not an obstruction or a danger to aviators in the area.
And there's another factor the demolition crew takes into account, muskox. Bering Air's chief pilot Ben Rowe says a helicopter pilot will take a Robinson R-44 to the site on demolition day.
There's a group of muskox that have been hanging out at the end of the beach there by Port Clarence, and our job will just be to get them out of the way so that they're clear when the tower comes down. We just get behind them and low, and muskox are pretty responsive, and they'll just walk on down the beach and out of the way.
The Coast Guard has operated more than 20 Loran stations throughout the country that provided a land-based navigation system for aircraft and mariners. Due to budget cuts directed from Congress and the age of the system, the Loran station will no longer be used. Officer Francis says most people use GPS units anyway, and 6 stations are bound by international agreements that are still broadcasting their international signal. Port Clarence is not one of them.
It'll be a cost savings for the Coast Guard not to have to operate the stations or the signals, paying things like electric bills and gas bills, especially in some of these remote areas where those utility bills can be very high.
Francis says the personnel stationed at Port Clarence will be rotated to other units. The Coast Guard is now taking steps to what Francis called harden the site, removing equipment that doesn't need to be there and turn off all signals. The site has been in operation for more than 50 years, built in 1961.
It's kind of sad to see this piece of history go away, but we hope to continue to serve the American public to the best of our abilities.
Port Clarence is located about 80 miles northwest of Nome. With demolition of the Loran Tower scheduled for later this week, the largest structure in Alaska will be a broadcast tower in Kinnick outside of Anchorage that stands at 808 feet, 542 feet shorter than the Loran. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
A new totem pole was raised in Juneau on Saturday. The new Eagle Totem on the University of Alaska Southeast campus is intended as a complement to another totem that has stood alone for years. KTOO's Matt Miller has the story.
Hey, everybody, listen to me. One voice, okay? That's it. One voice. Please listen. Well, we're going to go on three. One, two, three.
Three.
Strength and finesse, patience and tradition, all combine in the raising of a totem. Tlingit and Haida tribal assembly members, University of Alaska Southeast students and faculty and others lift an eagle totem from underneath the Egan Library. It's rested there for the last 11 months as it was crafted from a 45-foot red cedar log. Before it's raised at a prepared site between the library and Morant Building nearly 100 feet away, it's carried in a semi-circuitous route, resting on sawhorses during several stops.
Hey, everybody, down! Easy! Watch your hands! Down!
There's a short display in front of Akwan and Ushkatan clan elders to honor them and their ancestors. Visiting Haida dance groups provide the accompaniment during the procession.
And I cannot believe today is here.
UAS student Ralph Wolf says it was a nearly all-consuming effort for he and his fellow Wuching Native Student Club members. He confesses it may have been at the expense of their classwork over the last 3 years. There were the organizational and planning meetings, what crest to put on the pole and where to place it, getting approval from the Akwan and Ushkatan clan elders, and how to hire the selected carvers without getting stymied by the university's competitive bidding process. There were also the various banquet, raffle, and fry bread fundraising efforts.
What a day. We got the beautiful weather. Everybody's here. I think it's about time we raised the pole, huh?
Tlingits either belong to the Eagle and Raven Moiety, and both are usually represented during ceremonies and other events. But UAS Chancellor John Pugh says something was amiss when they erected the Raven Pole across from the Whitehead Building in 1993. Originally carved by Amos Wallace, it was donated to UAS during the sale of the Standard Oil Refinery in Nikiski.
At the raising of the Raven Pole, it was brought up by the Eagles that now we needed an Eagle Pole on campus. I mean, it was from the very beginning, it was brought up that we needed to bring the balance. It's just it's taken a long time to put it together to make it work.
This was at least the fourth big carving project for the Heidelberg brothers and carving team of Joe and TJ Young. Joe says they spent 6 months last year, sometimes 12 hours a day every day, turning the log into a 36-foot totem.
And a little subtle differences, you know, where we do, you kind of offset each other's skills, you know, and it does help to have, you know, a brother that could see how I do it and he knows how he does it, and we know that we each other does this, you know, we're going to be pleased with each other's work. Yeah, it would have been nice if he was left-handed or I was left-handed, then we could, you know, do both sides or, you know, at the same time maybe get done faster or something, but it didn't work out like that.
Warriors, are you ready? Oh, that way. Everybody, 1, 2, 3.
The pole carving and raising will cost about $180,000. A lot of it was offset with Sea Alaska Corporation donating the $50,000 log. Final maneuver. maneuvering onto the steel post and concrete foundation, the now upright pole is bolted into place. Crest facing the sun and looking toward Ak Bay. Afterward, personal stories and thanks, an offering to the ancestors, and dancing. After 17 years, spiritual balance returns to UAS. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Alaska Airlines is increasing the cost of checking a bag, but it's reducing some other fees. The Seattle-based carrier will charge $20 each for the first three bags for flights purchased beginning May 1st and departing on or after June 16th. That's a $5 increase for the first bag, but it's a reduction of $5 for the second bag and $30 for the third. Horizon, its regional sister carrier, will make the same changes. The fees are waived for first class and MVP club members, as well as those traveling only within Alaska. Alaska and Horizon do not plan to charge for carry-on baggage. That's being done by Florida-based Spirit Airlines, and some analysts expect it to spread. Michael Sintron of the International Airline Passengers Association says carriers are looking at fees for almost anything they consider an extra.
I think they're running out of ideas as far as what nooks and crannies inside the plane to charge people for. So most of these others will be add-on services that people might find valuable, especially things like more leg room.
Alaska and Horizon are also lowering the current $75 unaccompanied minor fee. It's dropping to $25 for direct flights and $50 for connecting flights within their system. The company is also altering its same-day ticket change fee and its held ticket policy. The Sioux Valley High School Steel Drum Band was singled out for special recognition recently at the regional music competition in Valdez. The student musicians have come a long way this year, despite some unique challenges. KTNA's Sue Dio has the story.
Once again, Sioux Valley High School's Steel Drum Band made top honors at Region 2 competition. The band has made a name for themselves across the borough, and with a command performance in Valdez, the ultimate honor, the band heads to state competition the second weekend in May. Mike Lindgren has temporarily taken the director's spot from music teacher Shauna Crone.
They have to have a superior rating from adjudication process in order to even qualify to go to state. And that was April 15th through the 18th in Valdez at Valdez High School. 590 students participating this time.
Music teacher and steel drum aficionado Shauna Crone went on maternity leave, and the temporary substitute Lindgren was left to fill her shoes, and says what the students were able to accomplish on their own was outstanding.
I don't have the background that she does, and so these guys have pretty much been self-motivated and done this on their own, which is amazing in itself.
The nine steel drum band members are clearly excited to perform and spoke together in music class about the competition and what it means.
Yeah, we've been there for 3 years in a row now, and we've made state every year so far, so it's kind of like a big deal, kind of, you know, to like a lot of expectations, you know, kind of like to carry on the program.
Yeah, this year it's like a really high honor to get a command performance at the actual regional concert, because there's only one, like there's say eight groups or eight rooms with judges in them, and they see, you know, God knows how many people, and so, you know, there's 600 kids at a conference, so it's a really, really big deal for you to be the one person in that one room that actually got a command performance.
Yeah, I think there's like 600 people and only eight groups made it, and we were the one that made it. And also it's pretty cool because Miss Carone, our teacher, did not teach us. We played the song one time with her all together because we kind of had crazy schedules, and then she left, and then we were kind of here by ourselves to learn it all by ourselves, and we came together and we did it and we got a command performance and we're going to state. And
of course Mike helped.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
So much nicer to play in here than in a portable.
It sounds a lot better.
More room.
We didn't even have it at the, we didn't have it for semester. It's kind of been lacking these last few years just because we've been in portables, and now that we're here, it's kind of exploding.
Most of the band members are seniors, will graduate in May and move on. The others are recruiting new members to keep the small but strong band and tradition alive. Meanwhile, the band will perform composer Winston Shadow Bailey's Dingolay at the All-State Music Festival May 7th at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and hope to do so well as to be honored with a command performance. In Talkeetna, this is Sue Dio.
Sunday morning, two cranes lowered a huge stainless steel sculpture to the street in front of the Anchorage Museum. Like the museum, the sculpture is made of rectangles. But British sculptor Anthony Gromley's 37,000-pound sculpture depicts the form of a squatting man.
I think of it this way. The mind inhabits the body. The body inhabits clothes and then rooms, and rooms are part of houses, and houses are part of cities, and cities inhabit a land.
Already, nicknames like Lego Man and less tasteful names than Squatting Man are circulating. And Gromley says that's just fine. The sculpture now becomes a living part of the local culture.
That's all par for the course. I think it would be very sad if everybody went po-faced and sort of glumly said, "Oh yes, very very nice piece of work." I mean, if people don't have a bit of a laugh about it, that'd be a sad business.
The piece was fabricated at an Anchorage metal shop, according to Gromley's specifications. He calls Anchorage a very pragmatic city. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning-Barnes in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Matt Miller and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Sue Dio in Talkeetna. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Tech Alaska, working to permit the Red Dog Mine so it can produce for Alaska for another 20 years. Details at reddogalaska.com. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. The Alaska Children's Trust is dedicated to preventing child abuse and neglect in Alaska. Experts tell us that when you listen, talk, and play with your child, the brain develops more fully. So listen, talk, and play. Three simple steps that add up to a brighter future for your child. The Alaska Children's Trust is committed to Alaska's children. For questions about parenting, call the Alaska Parent Line at 1-800-643-KIDS. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.